Welcome to the Deep Dive. Tonight we're stepping away from our usual stack of academic papers and, you know, those sterile market trend reports.
Yeah, it's a very different vibe for this one.
Exactly. Instead, we're opening a file we call the Midnight Ledger.
Right.
Our mission today is to investigate a hyper-specific commercial real estate mystery. And we're relying on a really meticulous case file compiled by industry expert Priyan Shu, or Priyata Thakur.
Yeah, Pri's work here is incredible. We're looking at historical forensic data right alongside modern investment strategies to basically understand a massive blind spot in traditional underwriting.
And to really grasp the lessons Pri uncovered, we first had to travel back to a very specific, chilling moment in time.
Set the scene for us.
Picture a sky the color of a bruised lung. It's January 10th, 1984, Oakland County, Michigan. Just a biting winter afternoon.
It's cold. It's quiet.
Very quiet. We were sitting in a dimly lit office. The only sound is the rhythmic metallic clacking of a radiator that has, you know, seen better winters.
Right.
And at the center of the room sits Jack Brown. His desk is just this chaotic map of a busy commercial real estate career.
We're talking scattered deeds, right?
Scattered deeds, closing statements, and the fading, overlapping rings of a dozen coffee cups. He's a man of routine. A man of stability.
And right now, he is balancing his ledger.
Exactly. It's a final act of order. Because chaos is already walking through the door.
Yeah. That is the exact moment the timeline shifts from a mundane Tuesday to a clinical forensic study.
It happens fast, doesn't it?
It really does. The door to that cold office opens. And by the time it closes again, Jack Brown is dead.
Wow.
And we are not looking at a scenario where a local dispute escalated or, you know, a random interaction got out of hand.
Right. The documentation in Pri's file reveals a calculated event.
Exactly. It stands as a profound, really brutal lesson hidden in the margins of commercial real estate. When you examine the police reports from that afternoon, you have to immediately rule out standard street crime.
Because of the precision.
Yes. This was a professional, highly orchestrated operation. And it exploited the very geography and nature of the real estate business.
The police timeline Pri assembled reads less like a true crime story and more like a military after-action report. Let's look at the sequence of events as pieces of evidence.
Okay, let's break it down.
At 2:30 in the afternoon, two suspects enter the building. And the profile is striking in its, well, its banality.
They blend right in.
Right. Two Caucasian males, early 30s. They possess a clean-cut appearance, and they're wearing standard business attire.
They look entirely unremarkable in that setting.
Totally. They look like any other prospective clients walking into a commercial real estate firm to discuss, you know, a triple net lease or a property acquisition.
And their demeanor is the first major anomaly for the investigators. They are perfectly calm.
No nervous energy at all.
None. There are no visible weapons when they enter the lobby, no erratic behavior, no raised voices. They blend seamlessly into the corporate environment of an Oakland County commercial firm.
They act like they belong there.
They do, or at least they project the absolute terrifying certainty that they belong there. They bypass any standard reception friction and move directly to Jack Brown's office.
Just 15 minutes later, at 2:45 p.m., a single small-caliber gunshot is reported by neighboring offices.
One shot.
One shot. And by 2:50, these two men simply vanish.
Yeah.
They don't run frantically down the sidewalk.
You trail of panic.
Right. They exit via a rear service door without haste and melt into the traffic of a nearby I-75 exit ramp. 5 minutes after the trigger is pulled, they're ghosts.
And the aftermath of that brief window tells us exactly what kind of forces we are analyzing here.
How so?
Well, when the authorities arrived, the scene defied all the usual logic of a violent crime. If this were a robbery, you know, the first target would be the immediate valuables.
But they didn't take anything.
Exactly. Jack's cash was sitting untouched in his desk drawer. His expensive watch was still securely fastened to his wrist.
When I see zero stolen cash and a complete absence of overturned chairs or scattered papers, my mind immediately jumps away from a crime of passion or a robbery.
Where does it go?
It points to an assignment.
Yes. And the forensic teams found something even more chilling that supports that theory.
What was it?
There were zero fingerprints on the door handle, the desk, or any surrounding surfaces. None.
Wait, really? Not a single print?
Not one. That means these suspects either wore tight-fitting, inconspicuous gloves, or they possessed the presence of mind to systematically wipe down the surfaces before they left the room.
That is wow.
It's the detail that caused the investigation to pivot hard. You are looking at operators who leave no trace.
Which means this wasn't a random tragedy, you know? It was a line item on someone's operational budget. It was an extraction.
A completely professional job.
Right. Which brings us to a glaring contradiction. When you see this level of chilling efficiency, one shot, no theft, no trace left behind, you expect the target to be an intelligence officer or a rival syndicate boss.
Right, somebody in the game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But Jack Brown was none of those things. He was a broker. He drafted deeds. Why does a standard real estate professional become the target of high-level professional operatives?
Because high-value assets attract high-level operators. And real estate is the ultimate high-value asset.
That makes sense.
Plus, geography is never an accident in commercial real estate, and it was not an accident in this operation. You mentioned the I-75 exit ramp earlier.
Right, their getaway ramp.
That proximity allowed for a seamless, immediate escape into interstate traffic. It demonstrates advanced reconnaissance. They chose the time and the place based heavily on the logistics of the getaway.
So it was scouted beforehand.
Absolutely. But the most lingering lead in Pree's file, the one that really forces us to question the nature of Jack's business ledger, is a simultaneous event.
The drug bust.
Yes. On the exact same day, authorities executed a massive drug bust in Saginaw, just up the highway.
Okay, I have to push back on that connection a little bit because my mind immediately jumps to the logistics of criminal enterprise.
Sure, it sounds like a leap.
Right. I mean, a cartel boss isn't sitting down and signing a personal check for a suburban office park. Is there an actual physical paper trail connecting an international drug operation to a quiet commercial broker in Oakland County?
That's the logical question to ask.
Did Jack Brown accidentally facilitate a land deal for the wrong people, or is this just geographical coincidence?
Well, the absence of a standard paper trail is the trail. Pry's files show that illicit organizations do not operate with transparent corporate structures.
Obviously not.
Right. The paper trail is intentionally fractured. What investigators found were layers of anonymous, limited liability companies, LLCs, that suddenly dissolved or shifted ownership right after the Saginaw drug bust.
Oh, I see.
To understand this, we have to look at the mechanics of commercial real estate money laundering. If a cartel has $5 million in illicit cash, they cannot simply deposit it into a traditional bank without triggering federal alarms.
The bank would flag it immediately.
Exactly. But if they use an anonymous shell corporation to purchase a distressed commercial property for $3 million in cash, they suddenly hold a legitimate asset.
And then they can inject the remaining $2 million into the property under the guise of renovations or capital improvements.
Precisely. They hire contractors who are either complicit or part of their own network, paying them in cash. Suddenly, that $5 million of dirty money is fully integrated into a clean, appreciating, tangible asset.
That is incredibly sophisticated.
And when they sell that property a few years later, the revenue is completely legitimate. It has been washed.
But to execute that complex maneuver, they need physical space.
They need physical space, and they need a broker. They need someone to draft the closing statements, file the deeds, and navigate the municipal zoning boards. They need a Jack Brown.
So the broker acts as the essential funnel for the capital.
Exactly.
The question that Pree's file leaves hanging in the cold air is, well, what did Jack know? Did he discover a glaring discrepancy in his ledger?
It's the multi-million dollar question.
Did he notice that the capital funding a particular acquisition was coming from a web of offshore shell companies that didn't make logical business sense?
Maybe.
Perhaps he tried to back out of a deal once he realized the money was tainted, threatening to expose the network. Or, terrifyingly, was he completely blind to the reality of his clients and merely became a loose end that needed to be tied up when the Saginaw bust compromised the operation?
We may never know his level of awareness, honestly, but the mechanical reality remains the same. A simple transaction, a signature on a dotted line, can suddenly intertwine a legitimate business with a transnational criminal enterprise.
It's sobering.
It really is. What Pree Edithacker proves in his analysis is that a commercial ledger does not merely track dollars, cents, and square footage. It tracks relationships. It tracks exposure. It tracks the flow of hidden power.
Which brings us directly to the modern-day implications for investors. Pree is essentially the lead investigator of this midnight ledger.
He's the one connecting the dots.
Right. As a premier commercial real estate specialist today, he uses this historical 1984 case as a masterclass on risk assessment. When Pri walks into a vacant commercial shell, a distressed hotel asset, or a stalled development project today, he doesn't just evaluate the floorboards and the structural integrity.
No, he goes much deeper than that.
He remembers the cold reality of Jack Brown's office. He sees the invisible history of the space.
He has to, because the commercial real estate industry suffers from a massive systemic blind spot.
What kind of blind spot?
Well, when institutional investors or private equity firms evaluate a prospectus for a new acquisition, they obsess over a very rigid, specific set of financial metrics. They run complex algorithms.
Sure, the standard underwriting process.
Right. They look at the probability of tenant defaults.
Right.
They measure local job growth against zoning restrictions.
They also hyper-focus on metrics like cap rate compression.
Oh, absolutely.
And for anyone listening who doesn't live inside a financial modeling spreadsheet, cap rate compression is essentially what happens when the market price of a property goes up, but the income it generates, like the rent paid by tenants, stays the same or grows much slower.
It's a huge factor for them.
Right. It squeezes your actual return on investment. It's a critical number.
Yeah.
But as you said, it is entirely sterile. It exists in a vacuum.
It is a purely mathematical abstraction. What Pri's boots-on-the-ground approach uncovered is that these traditional underwriting metrics completely fail to account for the human element.
The human element.
Specifically, the dark, illicit human element. A bank's underwriting department or a standard algorithmic risk model is not calculating the risk of cartel involvement.
They don't have a spreadsheet column for that.
They don't. They are not pricing in the physical danger of an asset's unrecorded history. They assume all capital operates rationally and legally.
It's like doing a meticulous mechanical inspection on a used car. You check the transmission, you measure the tire tread, you inspect the oil filter, and you declare it a sound investment.
Right. Perfectly logical.
But you completely fail to run a background check to see if that exact car was used as the getaway vehicle in a violent bank robbery the week before.
That is a perfect analogy.
Pri is pointing out that we are dealing in multi-million dollar assets that occasionally intersect with interests far darker and far more dangerous than anything a bank would ever put on paper.
That is the hidden side of the deal. If you purchase a commercial park, a boutique hotel, or a warehouse facility, you are not just buying the steel and the concrete.
You're buying the past.
You are inheriting the history of that space. You are inheriting its geographic vulnerabilities, like the immediate access to an interstate exit ramp that makes it ideal for rapid logistics, whether legal or illegal.
Wow.
And sometimes you might be inheriting the lingering attention of people who operate entirely outside the boundaries of the law, who still view that property as a piece of their operational infrastructure.
So if the traditional financial models, you know, the spreadsheets, the cap rates, the default probabilities, if they do not protect an investor from this hidden layer of risk, how does a modern professional actually navigate it?
It's a tricky balance.
Because we cannot simply paralyze the market and walk away from every complex commercial deal out of fear of a 1984 ghost story.
Yeah.
What is the actual mechanism for spotting these red flags today?
Well, Pri does not advocate for paranoia. He advocates for a heightened, synthesized state of awareness.
Okay, what does that mean practically?
His creative solution for unlocking value in these complex hotel and commercial investment puzzles relies on instinctual risk assessment combined with rigorous atmospheric data analysis.
Atmospheric data?
Yes. You have to synthesize the hard data provided by the bank with the contextual data of the real world.
I want to dig into that term, atmospheric data. It sounds incredibly cinematic, but what does that actually look like in practice for an investor walking a property today?
It's very practical, actually.
Because it has to be more than just getting a bad feeling in an empty hallway, right?
Right. Atmospheric data involves looking for the anomalies that the spreadsheet losses over. It means running a chain of title analysis and looking for abnormal LLC structures.
Like what we saw after the Saginaw bust.
Exactly. For example, if a property has flipped ownership 3 times in 2 years between identically structured anonymous shell companies with no obvious commercial purpose or physical improvements made to the site, that is atmospheric data. It is a massive red flag.
So it's looking for the sudden infusions of untraceable capital, or maybe noticing that the scale of the asset completely mismatches the buyer's professional profile.
Right, context matters.
If a brand new, unknown entity is suddenly offering all cash for a massive distressed hotel, and they have no operational history in hospitality, the traditional bank might just see a cleared check. But the investigator sees a laundering mechanism.
You are reading the room, reading the property, and crucially, reading the people involved in the transaction. Prize methodology requires you to underwrite the shadows around the property.
Underwrite the shadows. I like that.
Why is this specific asset being sold right now? Who actually benefits from the transfer of this deed? If the capital doesn't make logical sense, if the buyer's urgency doesn't match the market conditions, you are gathering atmospheric data that points to hidden risk.
Which makes Pree's ultimate rule so vital for anyone operating in this space. He insists that you must trust your gut during a showing.
Always.
And remember that in commercial real estate, you never truly know who is sitting on the other side of the closing table. The person signing the paperwork might just be the visible proxy for a much larger invisible machine.
That is the cold reality that the Jack Brown case forces us to confront. Because for Jack, there was no resolution.
Right, no justice.
There was no grand unmasking of the syndicate in a courtroom. The case file was boxed up. It was physically moved to the basement of the Oakland County precinct, left to gather dust alongside thousands of other unsolved mysteries.
And the leads regarding the Saginaw cartel connection,
they froze solid.
40 years of silence is its own kind of confession, isn't it?
Yeah.
The authorities to this day have no definitive answers.
None at all.
Those two clean-cut professional men in the business attire who walked out the rear exit and vanished down I-75 are likely long gone, having moved on to countless other assignments.
And the commercial real estate market did exactly what markets are designed to do. It absorbed the shock and it moved on.
It didn't stop.
The machine does not pause for tragedy. It simply recalculates the value of the square footage. Jack's building was eventually renovated.
And the physical evidence was just erased.
The blood was scrubbed from the floorboards, fresh drywall was hung, new carpets were laid down, and new tenants moved in to sign new leases. Jack Brown became a startling, quiet statistic.
A professional success who was turned into a professional hit.
Exactly.
It is a deeply sobering reminder. But as Pree notes in his analysis, while the market forgets, the floorboards remember. The history of an asset is baked into its foundation, whether the current owner knows it or not.
It doesn't just wash away.
Right. The vulnerabilities that made that office the perfect location for a hit, the isolation, the quick highway access, the anonymity of the corporate park, those factors still exist.
Which is why Pry's investigative methodology is so critical for modern investors. He sees what others miss because he is willing to look beyond the pristine prospectus and into the dark corners of the ledger.
It's an invaluable skill.
For you listening who is involved in business, real estate, or high-stakes investments of any kind, knowledge is only valuable when it is understood and applied. The lesson of the Midnight Ledger is not about avoiding a literal bullet.
It's about recognizing the landscape.
Yes, recognizing that risk is fundamentally multidimensional.
It isn't just financial. It is situational. It is relational. It is geographical. You listening to this deep dive right now probably aren't balancing a physical ledger in a freezing Oakland County office in 1984.
Probably not.
But you are absolutely navigating a modern professional world full of complex transactions, hidden histories, and unseen leverage.
The takeaway is that you must practice that instinctual risk assessment in your own dealings. You have to actively question the deal that seems too good to be true, or the capital that arrives too easily.
You have to look at the proximity of your investments.
Both geographically and financially. You have to watch out for elements you might not want to invite into your professional life. Behind every sterile, perfectly drafted contract, there are human beings.
And those human beings have their own motives.
Their own operational budgets and entirely different definitions of acceptable risk.
Absolutely. So the next time you walk through a newly renovated commercial space, you know, the air smelling of fresh drywall and new carpet.
Right.
Or the next time you sit down in a quiet room to look over a pristine closing document, I want you to ask yourself a question.
It's an important one.
What history has been paved over? And what invisible ghosts are still hiding in the margins of the ledger?